Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Ivan Pavlov, A Very Short Introduction by Daniel P. Todis, narrated by Gary Tiedemann. Chapter 1. Winter at Koltushi. New Year's Day 1936 found Ivan Pavlov at his favorite place, his science village outside Leningrad in the countryside at Koltushi. Grieving, exhausted, and excited, he was catching his breath after an extraordinary 15 months. They had begun with the Soviet state's effusive official celebration of his 85th birthday in September 1934. He had then overseen the completion of Koltushi, survived a near-fatal bout with pneumonia in spring 1935, embarked on a triumphant trip to London, returned to Leningrad in early August to star at the spectacularly successful International Congress of Physiology, paid a nostalgic visit to his hometown of Ryazan, and finally returned to Koltushi for some rest. There, his friend, artist Mikhail Nesterov, painted a portrait of his triumphant host, slamming his fists on a table in a characteristic passionate gesture, with his science village, symbol of his historic achievements, in the background. 1 month later, in October 1935, his son Sevolod died suddenly of cancer. Pavlov blamed himself for passing on defective genes, and in his eulogy, proselytized for genetics and eugenics. He then resumed his intense work routine, 6 days weekly in his three labs, plus the regular Wednesday gatherings with co-workers. In late December, in an annual expression of political incorrectness, he did the same every Easter, he announced a Christmas holiday for his labs and returned to Koltushi. "The damned grip still lingered," Pavlov complained, "and has shaken my certainty of living to 100, but he needed at least 5 more years for his 2 passions, to witness the triumph of our scientific idea and the fate of my homeland." His 3 decades of research on conditional reflexes had reached a critical juncture. Pondering recent experiments on dogs and Koltushi's chimps, Rosa and Raphael, he had decided on a bold new turn. Now he gathered his thoughts for April's Psychology Congress in Madrid, where he would unveil his revised understanding of the conditional reflex and innovative lines of investigation on animals' most complex perceptions and behaviors. As for Russia's fate, he desperately wanted to believe that things were changing for the better. The past 2 years had been confusing and contradictory. On the one hand, there was the quiet terror, the arrest and exile of many former people, aristocrats, clerics, merchants, and czarist bureaucrats, the campaign against religion, and the relentless reworking of a normal consciousness into a servile one, Pavlov's words, through the Stalin cult and pervasive propaganda. On the other hand, there was the more moderate second 5-year plan, the end of rationing, the more inclusive popular front politics of the Soviet Writers' Congress and Communist International, and most promising, perhaps, Pavlov suggested, even the Swallows of Spring, Stalin's sponsorship of a new, more democratic constitution. In Leningrad, dozens of former people drawn by his reputation as a dissident lay siege to his apartment every day or relayed furtive letters, begging for help. He did what he could, but horrified, moved, and guilt-ridden about his own good fortune, he suffered from insomnia and an irregular heartbeat. Here, at Koltushi, he confided to his wife, Serafima, he was less sensitive to all this, and his heart righted itself. Pavlov remained at Koltushi that winter longer than usual, for much of January, laboring over 2 manuscripts. One, entitled Psychology as a Science, radically revised his long-standing view of the conditional reflex and its place in psychology. The other was his attempt to do something for religion in the form of an essay on science, Christianity, and communism addressed to Vyacheslav Molotov, Stalin's right-hand man. For the more than six decades since he had defied his father and abandoned the theological seminary for studies at St. Petersburg University, Pavlov's passionate practice of science had dominated and integrated his life. He was an outstanding practitioner of the mechanistic vision and new experimental physiology of the mid-late 19th century. From the 1890s until 1903, he deployed exquisite experimental and surgical prowess, interpretive ingenuity, and an army of co-workers to analyze the digestive system as a purposive and precise chemical factory. His masterful Lectures on the Work of the Main Digestive Glands, 1897, brought him international renown, and in 1904, Russia's first Nobel Prize. That digestive factory, however, was inhabited by a ghost, Psyche, which continually frustrated, and for Pavlov, explained the experimenter's inability to wrest from lab dogs truly factory-like results. He then turned to this ghost itself in the three decades of research on conditional reflexes that raised him from a Nobel Prize winner to an international icon. "Only one thing in life is of essential interest for us," he declared as he began this research, "our psychical experience." His consistent, oft-stated goal was to address the torments of our consciousness by fusing the objective and subjective realms, that is, physiological processes and the psychological experiences that accompanied them. These two realms and their relationship constituted what Pavlov termed higher nervous activity, and by his research, by understanding the psyche in terms of mechanistic, determinist law, he hoped to explain human torments and render them accessible to the palliative force of reason. In his research both on digestion and on higher nervous activity, Pavlov sought precise, consistent, fully determined results in experiments on very complex phenomena in intact animals. A careful experimenter, perceptive observer, and committed truth-seeker, he was acutely aware that his results were, in fact, inconsistent. In the digestive research, that awareness had led him to appreciate the great significance of the idiosyncratic psyche. That psyche was itself the explanatory target of his conditional reflexes research, and his attempt to achieve satisfactorily consistent results launched him on investigations of an ever-multiplying set of variables, a constantly expanding range of subjects, including the dynamics and interaction of excitation and inhibition, differing nervous types, constitution and temperament of dogs and humans, the effects of heredity and environment, mental illness, the interaction between individual reflexes and systems of reflexes in the cerebral cortex, and the different ways in which animals make associations between various stimuli. Pavlov's dogs, salivating on cue to a Pavlovian bell, entered international scientific and lay culture, along with the passionate, charismatic, gray-bearded wizard himself, who was pronounced the prince of world physiology to a thunderous ovation at the 1935 International Congress of Physiology, which, in his honor, convened in his homeland. Yet here lurked a paradox. As Pavlov's closest scientific collaborator, Maria Petrova, observed, he was pronounced the greatest physiologist of his time, and nevertheless, in an international setting, remained to some degree alone. Very few of Pavlov's international admirers understood what he was doing, how, and why. That was especially true in the United States, home to the world's largest psychological community, where proponents of the dominant behaviorist orientation adopted Pavlov as one of their own. In so doing, they misinterpreted Pavlov's commitment to objective psychology. For the American behaviorists, objectivity signified attention to external behaviors and the exclusion of the subjective psyche. But Pavlov was preoccupied with the psyche, and for him, objective psychology meant the incorporation of the inner life of animals, including humans, within the laws of higher nervous activity. This misinterpretation, institutionalized in deeply flawed English language translations of Pavlov's work and incorporated into common culture in the form of distorted tropes and witticisms, is evident to this day in widespread misunderstanding of Pavlov's practices, goals, and achievements. Pavlov never trained a dog to salivate to the sound of a bell. He was completely uninterested in training dogs, except sometimes as part of experiments with other goals. And the iconic bell would have proven totally useless to his goals. Nor did he ever use the terms conditioned and unconditioned reflex, which are incorrect, misleading translations of his deeply considered choice of the Russian words uslovny and bezuslovny, meaning conditional and unconditional. For Pavlov, the conditional reflex was both a phenomenon and, more important, a method, an approach for investigating the psyche. Nor did Pavlov view his experimental animals as unthinking, emotionless machines. For him, dogs were simple people, and people were complex dogs. Each had active inner lives that could be understood by reference to the other. Reflecting on experiments and discussing them with coworkers, he constantly interpreted the responses of his lab animals by reference to the life experiences, personalities, feelings, and thoughts of historical and literary figures, his acquaintances, and quite often himself. Powerfully purposeful, with a profound moral sense, he struggled to reconcile his belief in free will and personal responsibility with his commitment to determinism. Pavlov, in short, was not an American behaviorist. His life and thought were deeply embedded in Russian history and culture, especially that of its intelligentsia. Born to a family of priests in provincial Ryazan before the serfs were emancipated, he left the theological seminary to embrace the new secular faith of science, modernization, and westernization, made his home and professional success in the booming imperial capital of St. Petersburg, suffered the cataclysmic destruction of his world during the Bolshevik seizure of power and civil war of 1917-21, rebuilt his life in his 70s during the Leninist 1920s, and flourished professionally as never before in 1929-36 during the industrialization, Cultural Revolution, and terror of Stalin times. The science of this quintessential objectivist was suffused by the context and common sense of his time and culture, and by his own experiences, values, beliefs, and personality. These influences are often recognizable as metaphors in his science. The metaphor of digestive system as factory that guided his Nobel Prize-winning studies of the 1890s, for example, was rooted in his response to the Industrial Revolution of contemporary St. Petersburg, a hopeful response that drew on the scientistic worldview he had imbibed as a teenage seminarian from the people of the 1860s. Another central metaphor joined his science directly to his deep love and concern for his homeland, Pavlov's equation of excitation with freedom and inhibition with discipline, and his belief that a balance between the two pairs was necessary for an animal, person, or people to correctly perceive reality and respond appropriately. This metaphor underlay his lab's central line of investigation on nervous types, which both informed and drew on his concern about the Russian type. Pavlov expressed that concern most explicitly in three speeches during the cataclysmic year of 1918, in which, based on his experiments with dogs, he explained the disasters that had befallen Russia as the consequences of an overexcitable Russian type, and held out the hope that his research might enable his countrymen to correct this inborn deficiency. That, indeed, was the central rationale for the founding, one decade later, of his Institute of Experimental Genetics of Higher Nervous Activity at Koltushi. Those two final essays composed at Koltushi, then, were Pavlov's last words about two long-standing, interrelated preoccupations. In one, he was fundamentally revising the very concept of the conditional reflex to better investigate and understand the psyche in dogs, chimps, and humans, while in the other, he was grappling explicitly with the deeper relationship between his science, human psychology, including his own, Christianity, and Bolshevism. That is, with the fate of humanity, and most immediately, of his homeland. The unifying theme in that second essay also expressed an underlying psychological preoccupation that integrated Pavlov's central interests and concerns as a man, a scientist, and a Russian in a single, logical, emotional whole. What, he asks rhetorically, is the most difficult, really terrible thing in life? For him, there was only one conceivable answer. Случайности. Happenstance, randomness, accidental events, случайности of birth, the inheritance of genes, and social class, of environment, initial conditions, of death, illness, of every other misfortune and obstacle in life. For Pavlov, случайности, the singular is случайност, were the always negative, frightening consequences of randomness and unpredictability. As a mechanistic determinist, he did not believe in the ultimate indeterminacy of anything. Yet, случайности plagued a vulnerable individual from outside one's frame of reference, understanding, and control, rendering it impossible to peacefully and soberly calculate and fulfill my mission in life. That required a regular, undisturbed course of life and certainty in it. But where can one obtain either? The opposite of and antidote to случайности was another lifelong keyword, правильность. The adjective is правильный, regularity, lawfulness, certainty, and correctness, in the organism, in the form of scientific law, and in life. Pavlov demanded these qualities in his daily existence, cherishing order and predictability as a reassuring measure of control over his own explosive nature, and the demonstrably cruel randomness of life. Случайность was the realm of chaos and vulnerability. Правильность, that of law, certainty, and control, the province of science. Правильность was also necessary to целесообразность, another lifelong keyword, meaning purposiveness, both in physiological processes and in the life well lived. Pavlov's personality and science were not, of course, reducible to his fear of randomness and drive for certainty. People and science are much more complicated than that. This fear, that drive, and those keywords, however, manifested themselves in every dimension of his life, his earliest childhood experiences, his reaction to events, people, and politics, his approach to work, relaxation, and sports, his love letters, and of course, his science. The keywords случайность and правильность worked metaphorically to establish and express intellectual and emotional relations between these various realms. For Pavlov, the threat of randomness and the palliative of lawfulness brought together his reactions to such seemingly disparate subjects as his own emotional explosiveness and bouts of depression, Dostoevsky's novels, the destruction of his university mentor, the framing and interpretation of experiments on digestion and higher nervous activity, the nature of Bolshevism and the plight of his homeland, and the relationship of science and religion. Pavlov's scientific style, achievements, and goals, then, emerged from a layering of personal temperament and experiences, training and talents, in a particular Russian setting, during an era in physiology that identified deterministic, mechanistic explanations with good science, and within a broader social-political culture that joined such explanations to a broader vision and dreams for humanity. He was in this a most fortunate man, a man of one piece, as one relative put it, whose character, scientific interests, and social political values developed together in a single, integrated, albeit often contradictory, whole. This reached its apotheosis with conditional reflexes, which was not mere research, but a quest, intense, all-encompassing, alternatingly exhilarating and depressing, in close emotional and intellectual contact with his broader life and preoccupations. The biographical history and intertwining of the emotional, political, and scientific dimensions of this quest shape this introduction to Pavlov's life and science.